Buongiorno a tutti voi stamattina. Sono contentissimo di stare qui. I'm very happy to be with you this morning. The last time I did this series of lessons was in August in Trieste, Italy. Actually, I was doing them for the Grotto studies. We were in Grotto, Italy, doing them. I enjoy very much talking about Daniel, the book of Daniel, and talking about the timely application of these principles to the culture in which we live. I thank you so much for the invitation to come and be with you. I'll say some more at the end of the service this afternoon as well. But I want to tell you, I understand that you've had a lot going on in this congregation over the last several days. I am mindful of the fact that congregations are big families. And when one member suffers, all suffer. And when one person is bearing a burden, everyone's bearing a burden. We share in this thing together. I appreciate that about you, and I appreciate the camaraderie of spirit that you have. Yesterday, in the second lesson yesterday, I think we talked about the importance of spiritual camaraderie. And this morning, we're going to continue in our discussion of Daniel. And we're going to move on to chapter 4. Now, I don't want you to be concerned that we left the three Hebrew boys in the burning fiery furnace yesterday. They came out, as you know, unscathed, with no smell of smoke on them. Everything went as it should have. And once again, at the end of all of that, Nebuchadnezzar praised God. Do you remember? You remember at the end of chapter 2 when Daniel had interpreted his dream after Nebuchadnezzar had a bad night, he couldn't sleep, had a bad dream, he was all upset, he was going to kill everybody. The dream was interpreted. And then Nebuchadnezzar was so happy because he got his way again. He had the interpretation for his dream, so he was just praising God, everything was great. The very next thing we're told is that he's erecting a great golden image and everyone's falling down. He's commanding everyone to fall down and worship. It's a sign of loyalty and tribute to him. To refuse to do that would have been seen as a personal statement of disloyalty to him. The Chaldeans immediately accused the Hebrews of being disloyal to Nebuchadnezzar. Thus, the problem with the burning fiery furnace and the story of and the narrative of Daniel chapter 3. Now, at the end of all of this, after Nebuchadnezzar has seen the great miracle, behold, three men were thrown into the furnace, but four were seen walking around there. Perhaps you have, in your studies of that, you have had some discussion about who that fourth person may have been. I happen to know the truth on that. If you'll ask me later, I can. I'm kidding. There's some discussion about the particular identification of that fourth individual. But let me just say to you that the thing that is important in all of this is that these young men who have been expatriated from their own country and they've been taken away from their families and they are totally immersed in a culture that is thoroughly pagan. These boys maintained their faith in God and they served God faithfully. And their convictions about right and wrong did not change just because their mom and daddy weren't with them anymore. And their convictions about what they would do and what they would not do were not going to be mitigated or amended by the consequences that were set before them. Nebuchadnezzar is threatening them. And he's saying, do you understand that if you do not bow down to that image, you are going in the fire? And their response to him was, in so many words, look, that's not the issue, what the consequence going to be. The issue is this. We don't bow down to images. That's the issue. And so, I think it is important for us to grasp that principle of the propriety and the wisdom and the appropriateness of establishing spiritual and moral absolutes in our lives early. I want to say something to parents and grandparents. Your little ones, from the very earliest ages, they need to be growing up with a clear understanding of some moral and spiritual absolutes. And what that means, among other things, ladies and gentlemen, is that we need to have some consistency in our own lives, so that they understand that an absolute means absolute. There are some things that we do because we are the children of God and we are going to do these things. And there are some things that we will not do because we are the children of God and we are not going to do these things. And the circumstances and the consequences notwithstanding, it just doesn't matter. This is who we are. And I'm saying that parents and grandparents have a tremendous responsibility to get those principles established early on. Now, at the end of chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar, as he sees these boys as they come out of the fire, you remember he was praising God when Daniel interpreted his dream. Now in verse 28 of chapter 3, the text says, Nebuchadnezzar spake, and he said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and have yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God." I want to say something to you. There were moments, fleeting as they may have been, there were moments when Nebuchadnezzar absolutely got it. I mean, he got it. He understood and he proclaimed to the people, their God delivered them because they refused to serve or worship any God except their own God. What a wonderful, wonderful testimony of the lives of those three young men that they helped this audacious king to understand at least that principle. Well, when chapter 4 opens, "Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. It hath seemed good unto me to show the signs and wonders that the Most High God has wrought toward me. How great are his signs, how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. His dominion is from generation to generation." I want to say something to you as we begin the study in chapter 4. There are times in life when it is easier to believe in God. There are times in life when it is easier to praise God. There are times in life when God's presence and His working and His activity is more obvious to us. There are times when it's more clearly seen by us. And I'm saying to you that even for someone like Nebuchadnezzar, there were moments in life, you know, when the sun is shining and the grass is green and the children are all bathed and clean and their teeth are straight and nobody is sick. Wow. Those are good moments. We can believe that there is a God in heaven. I'll tell you when it's hard, folks. It's when it's 15 degrees outside and wet and nasty and three kids are throwing up and two dogs are making a mess in the house and you've got all kind of problems going on and the electricity goes out. I was seeing this morning from some of my friends north of here where the temperature this morning was in the single digits and they had no power this morning. And I was trying to imagine what it's like getting up on a Sunday morning with a house full of kids and no power. And it's 7 degrees outside. There are times in life, ladies and gentlemen, when it's easy for us to praise God and serve God. I would just tell you, when I'm with you here, it's easy for me to sing and to pray and to praise. I like being with you. And in the context of this environment, that's not a problem. I would tell you that I do not spend 24/7, 365 days a year in a context with you like this. And there are moments in life that are hard. They're just hard. And we need to come to understand that God is not looking for lip service in the sunshine. God's looking for men and women of genuine faith who can say with the Apostle Paul, look, we walk by faith, not by sight. Because absolutely there are times when we cannot see. I cannot see the end of the road. I cannot see the light at the end of the tunnel. I thought I saw a light. It was a freight train come. That's the way life is sometimes. I do not know why this is happening. I do not know why my prayers were not answered in the way that I desired that they be answered. I do not know why others that I love are sick, are hurting, are suffering, are dying. I do not know why the grief and pain is existing around. So many moments in life, I simply do not know. And in those moments, faith is more challenging. Well, look in verse 4. The scenario changes. Nebuchadnezzar had easy faith. Now we've got another problem. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream that made me afraid. I think someone should ask him what he was eating at night before he went to bed. He was having bad dreams over and over again. You remember in chapter 2 he had this problem. Now he's having it again. He had a bad dream. He was on his bed. He slept a lot. He was on his bed. He had a dream. It made him afraid. The thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me, and therefore I made a decree, bringing all the wise men of Babylon before me that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. And then came in the magicians, enchanters, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers. If I were them, I would have been very afraid because I would have been remembering the last time this happened. And I would have been remembering the little temper tantrum that he was throwing when he didn't sleep well and when he was insecure and when he was afraid and when he had a bad dream and when he wanted to kill everybody because he was upset. Verse 7 says, then came in the magicians, enchanters, and Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. I told the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And I told the dream before him, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is with thee, and no secret troubleth thee. Tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen, and the interpretation thereof. Thus were the visions of my head upon my bed. I saw and behold a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great, and the tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof reached unto heaven, and the sight thereof to the end of the earth. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was food for all. The beast of the field had shadow under it. The birds of the heaven dwelt in the branches thereof. All the flesh was fed from it. I saw in the visions of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down from heaven. He cried aloud, and he said thus, hew down the tree, cut off its branches, shake off its leaves, scatter its fruit. Let the beast get away from under it, and the fowls from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of its roots in the earth, even with the band of iron and brass and the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beast in the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from a man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. The sentence is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth it up over the lowest of men. You remember a similar statement to that over in chapter 2. When Daniel was reminding them that God is the one who removes kings in Daniel 2 and verse 21. He changes the times and the season. He removes kings. He sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the, that God is on his throne. Now, Nebuchadnezzar is telling Daniel the dream. He said, this is what the watcher said, the one that came down from heaven. This is the decree that he made. And he said, this is going to happen until you understand that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will and sets it up over it, the lowest of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen, and thou, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation, for as much as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, but thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. Well, let me just remind you of something. Nebuchadnezzar was used to having his own way, for sure. And Nebuchadnezzar was one of the ones when he wanted an answer to something and he called in his wise men, if they couldn't tell him what he wanted to hear, he would just get some other counsel. We do that with doctors all the time, don't we? We go to a doctor and say, I just feel terrible. And he said, well, no wonder. You're not getting enough sleep at night. You're not getting enough rest. Your diet is atrocious. You're 25 pounds overweight. You come in here telling me you feel bad. I'll tell you what you need to do. You need to get a grip on yourself. You need to start exercising every day. You need to throw away those Fritos and potato chips, and you need to start eating right. You need to lose some weight, and you need to get yourself in shape. I look at him and I say, do you have a partner I could see? Isn't that the way we are in life? We call people in, we pay people good money to give us good advice. And then we walk away leaving it on the table. People do that spiritually. And folks have been doing that for thousands of years. But I want to warn you about something, folks. When it comes to spiritual truth, you need to be warned about something. If you don't want the truth, you're not going to get it. I don't mean it won't be available. I just mean you're not going to get it. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 10 through 12, the Apostle Paul issues what is to me one of the most frightening warnings in all of the Scripture. And it has to do with the problem of individuals who no longer love the truth. And do you know what Paul said? He said, if you don't love the truth, you can write this down and take it to the bank. If you don't love the truth, you won't have the truth. You don't want to believe the truth? Okay, big boy. God's not going to force feed you truth. You don't want to, listen to me carefully. Nobody's going to accidentally stumble onto the truth and blindly go to heaven without intending to or trying to or loving God or loving truth. They're just accidentally just going to fall in there. That's not the way it's going to happen. Paul said, you don't love the truth, God will see to it that you have something to believe that you love. And I'll tell you, we are living in a culture that over and over, people are saying things absurd. Well, that's not my truth. Your truth. Like everybody's got their own variety. Chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, butter, pecan. What are you talking about? That's not my truth. Truth is truth, ladies and gentlemen. In this postmodern age, where we're surrounded in a culture of people who no longer believe in truth, they don't believe in absolute truth, they have this humanistic idea that all of us have this God within us, that we are our own truth, that we make our own truth. We need to get past that, and we need to protect our children from believing that junk. That is not true. And Paul said, if you don't love the truth, God will see to it that you have a lie to believe. It's a dangerous thing not to love truth. Well, Daniel comes in and Nebuchadnezzar says, hey, let me check the time here. Nebuchadnezzar says, let me tell you something. This is what I dream. There was this watcher in heaven and he came down. There was this big tree. And he said, cut it down. Shake off all the leaves. No more birds in its branches. No more beasts resting and feeding underneath it. This great tree is coming down. Now, Daniel, you're the man. I love you, Daniel. You're the one who can interpret the dream. You have the spirit of the gods, and I know you're the great one. You can do this. You can tell me what this means. Now, I want you to tell me, what does this dream mean? Verse 19 says, then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was stricken dumb for a while. And his thoughts troubled him. This is one of those occasions when the literal translation doesn't quite do justice. Daniel heard what Nebuchadnezzar said about the tree coming down. And Daniel was speechless. He was speechless in front of the king. And the king realized that. I mean, you tell people something sometimes, and you can just see by the expression on their face. It's one of two things. They're either like the deer caught in headlights, you know, just... Or they're terrified. And the king answered and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation trouble you. Now, the king is saying, he told Daniel the dream. Daniel's just standing there, just trembling, shaking. He's just frozen. He can't even speak. And the king's getting a little aggravated. And he said, hey, boy, speak up. What's wrong with you? Say something. And Daniel said, O king, he said, the interpretation of this dream is going to be music in the ears of those that hate you. It's going to be sweet to your adversaries. This isn't good. He said, you know that big old tree? The one that grew and was strong, whose height reached to heaven, the sight thereof to the earth, the leaves were fair, the fruit was much, was food for all, the beasts of the field were under it, under whose branches the birds of heaven had their... You remember that tree that big old tree, hey, it's you, buddy. It is thou, O King. We have this expression in our own culture. You know, it's probably most common in the realm of athletics. Things are going on. There's a team camaraderie, a team spirit. Somebody gets the goal. Somebody makes the touchdown. Somebody throws a pass. You're the man. You're the man. It's a good thing. You're the man. In the Bible, I don't ever remember a time when that expression is used, thou art the man, and it was a good thing. I remember a prophet, a non-literary prophet, his name was Nathan. He came to David one time. He said, let me tell you about a rich man that had exceeding many flocks and herds and a poor man that had one little ewe lamb. You know, that rich man stole that little ewe lamb from that poor man, killed it and dressed it and gave it to a stranger, and David got mad. And his righteous indignation was boiling over. And he said, whoever did this is worthy to die. And Nathan said, you're the man. Thou art the man. Now Daniel's saying that right now to Nebuchadnezzar. You're the man. You want me to tell you what this dream means? I'm going to tell you. You are the man. And God is about to bring you down. It is thou, O King. You've grown and become strong. Your greatness is grown. It reaches into heaven, dominion to the earth. Okay, so he goes on and he says to the king, here are all the things you dream, and this is what it means. God is about to humble you. And you are about to come down. And you are about to experience something that in all of your life and all of your experience as king, you cannot even imagine what is coming. I want to say something to you. What? Do you know why Daniel was speechless when he was standing in front of the king? Not because he didn't know what the dream meant. He knew. Not because he couldn't speak the language to express himself. He could. But did he have a heavy message? I want to ask you something. If you are Nathan the prophet being sent to King David, or if you are Daniel, the prophet, standing in front of Nebuchadnezzar, how does a nobody look into the eyes of the most powerful man in the world and say to him, thou art the man? How do you do that the right way? I'll tell you this. There are times in the context of the reality of our lives when we absolutely have the responsibility to say to someone else, thou art the man. But I'll tell you what I've seen, and I've seen it happen more than once in more than one congregation. A situation comes up. You have a King David situation. You have a Nebuchadnezzar situation. You have some situation. And somebody has to perform the task of Galatians 6:1. Brethren, if one among you is overtaken in a trespass, ye who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of meekness, thinking about yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and in so doing fulfill the law. Somebody's got to say something. Oh boy, and then it starts. I'll tell you right now, I'm not going back to that church. That preacher came and he said this and this, and my son was upset and it made him really mad and he just ran him. I didn't like the way the preacher said that. You didn't. Did he say something that wasn't true? Was wrong? Was he hateful? No, it just wasn't right. It just I tell you, the elders came to our house and he talked to my husband and I'll tell you that I know my husband was wrong. I'm not saying my husband was right, but I'll tell you right now, they didn't say that very well. Really? Like, how many ways can you say thou art the man and make somebody feel good about it? I want to tell you something, folks. We bear responsibilities to one another that at times are not easy. And I'll tell you something, when we're bearing a message like that, everybody involved has accountability. Everybody does. The person who is going needs to go with the spirit of meekness, thinking about himself, lest he also be tempted. The person who is receiving it needs to receive it with a spirit of humility, thinking about himself. And everybody else needs to be on their knees, praying for the one who is in sin and in danger of losing their soul, and thanking God that there's somebody willing to say something. And I don't know the perfect way to tell somebody, thou art the man. But I do know this, three principles. Number one, when we go, we need to be clear. Because if we go and we leave and they don't understand what the problem was, we didn't accomplish anything. And secondly, we need to be careful. Because the next time it may be somebody coming to us. I can fall also. And thirdly, we need to be diligent. Timothy was in Ephesus. He was surrounded by people who no longer wanted to hear the truth. What's a preacher supposed to do? When he's in a situation in a church, the elders were about to apostatize. Remember Acts 20, verses 28 through 32. You remember what Paul said to the elders on that occasion. Grievous wolves are going to enter in among you. From among your own selves, men are going to... And so in 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul is writing to Timothy. And Timothy is in the middle of it. What's he supposed to do? They don't want to hear the truth anymore. Having itching ears, they are looking for preachers. These preachers who come in and they like positive sermon. They want to hear something encouraging. They want to hear something nice. They want to hear what they want to hear. What's a preacher supposed to do? And Paul said, preach the word. Be instant in season and out of season. Reprove and rebuke and exhort with all long suffering and doctrine. And Paul said, I'll tell you what you do, Timothy. Suffer hardship. Do the work of an evangelist and fulfill your ministry. Sometimes you have to say, thou art the man. Did we get the 5-minute bell yet? We did? I didn't hear it, and that's very dangerous. The trap door is going to swallow me, and I'll never know what happened. Okay, 3 minutes. God's patience is limited. Okay, Daniel tells the king, you're going down, buddy. God's about to humble you. He said, and I'm going to give you some advice. In verse 27. He said, this is my counsel for you. I'm going to give you some advice. Here's your clear instruction. Stop sinning. Break off your sins by righteousness. Stop sinning. I want to tell you something. If you can't think of anything else to say, that's always a good thing to say. Stop sinning. Show mercy to the poor if there may be a lengthening of your days. All this came upon the king Nebuchadnezzar at the end of 12 months. Okay, here's my point. This is probably going to be the last one we have time for. Daniel gave the king horrible news. And the king went home that night. I think he had another bad night. The text doesn't say. I'm thinking that he did. But he woke up the next morning and he looked around and guess what? Everything was the same. And he went on about his day, probably pretty nervous. And he went to bed that night, slept a little better, got up the next day. Everything was the same. And you know what? A week later, life was good. Nothing changed. Everything was the same. A month later, man, he was strutting his stuff. He was the king. 6 months later, 8 months later, 10 months later, 12 months have passed. He hasn't changed a thing, and nothing happened. Verse 30 says, the king spoke, and he said, in verse 29, at the end of 12 months, he was walking in the royal palace of Babylon. The king spoke and said, is not this great Babylon, which I have built? You see that? Bless his little ego. I have built for the royal dwelling place by the might of my power and for the glory of my majesty. He's just walking around looking at his empire and his power. He said, I am really something. I'm even better than I thought. I am great. And the text says, while the words were still in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from. A voice from heaven spoke and said, that's it, buddy. Gig is up. Time's up. Over. And that's how it happens. And judgment came. Just like God said. It always does. I'll show you the next slide. We don't have time to talk about it. Nobody's bigger than God. One of the things he's going to have to learn. He may be the big boy, but big boys are still boys. He's not God, and he's not going to outdo God. And the day is going to come, yes, even for Nebuchadnezzar, every knee is going to bow, and every tongue is going to confess. We all have a choice. We can bow to God now, or we can just wait and bow for the first time then, but we are going to bow. That's the message.